Now, as it says in the bio, I've been in this probably longer than anybody, since 1976, and spent the first 4 years at Booz Allen. Won a wonderful contract for the Carter White House that apparently I learned after the fact was actually ordered by President Carter, and the studies were done for him. And there were rifle shot studies on all the new energy technologies, wind, solar, geothermal, biomass, all the renewables, cogen, fuel cell, storage, coal gasification, liquefaction, oil shale, advanced nuclear, all of them in a 3 or 4 year period of time. So that was a great base, and I guess we're all still working on whatever we learned in our 20s. But the perspective I'd like to give you is that, in my view, we're 40 years into a 100 year transition to a clean energy economy. 40 years into a 100 year transition, ballparking it. And when you're 40 years into a 100 year transition, you're in the vertical part of the S curve. You know, everything goes in S curves. It goes slow, and then it goes fast, and then it slows down again and matures. Well, we're in the vertical part of the S curve. Those statistics don't quite show that because they are a limited set. They don't include nuclear. They don't include large hydro. There's a bunch of other things it doesn't include that are also being invested in. And also, they need to be adjusted, Ethan, I'll make the suggestion, for the cost reduction equivalency. So, you know, we have current and constant dollars. I think we should have current and constant costs, so that if costs had not come down, what would those numbers look like? And then you would see the growth. Because the decline in the last few years is really because the cost came down so sharply, because those were the years that China entered the world manufacturing and brought those costs down. So that offsets the revenue growth. So we are in the boom period. This is what I call success. So if you think life is tough today, it was much tougher before, and these are the good old days. Okay, this is where we have lots of little problems, but we're not fully stopped, and we're not fully successful. We're in the mainstream of building an industry. And what we've seen over these 4 years, or 40 years, is four big waves of innovation. And this is something that Wilson Center should be looking at and then extending. Technology innovation has occurred. You know that. It's going to keep going. It's not stopping yesterday. Well, what's the outlook on that? People like yourself maybe can give a view. Even more important for policy is market structure innovation. You know, it began with PURPA, the Public Utility Regulatory Policies Act of 1978, which said the utilities have to buy power from non-utility sources. That's the big bang of this whole industry worldwide, and now that has now spread in the IPP industry, even into the depths of Africa, which we're going to hear about, that one law. So go back to that and see where that has gone. But we also have net metering, the very fundamental that a utility has a monopoly franchise and therefore has an obligation to serve load. With net metering, no longer a monopoly. I have a right to grow a tomato in my yard and not buy it from the grocery store. I have a right to generate electricity now and not buy it from the utility. This is a fundamental restructuring of the utility structure that was put in place globally by the U.S. Federal Power Act in 1935. Fundamental market structuring, and this is a great arena for analysis by the Wilson Center. Where are we going with market structuring? How adaptable is it around the world in faraway places that don't have the legal structure that we have to back it up? Remember, it's all rule of law and structure of law that stands behind these. Very difficult to do PURPA, I should say, even in the United States. It went to the Supreme Court in 1983 and had to be reaffirmed. 5 years of legal battles over this. Look at the history of that. So how much can we spread the U.S. method of doing business around the world? And lastly, policy innovation. We've had great policy innovation. The renewable portfolio standards, the investment tax credit, production tax credit in Europe, the feed-in tariff. These are policy inventions about people like yourself sitting around having coffee, getting an idea, and then carrying it forward and getting it enacted. It just didn't fall on us from the sky. Individual people thought of these ideas, and through my career, it's been a real pleasure to be involved in a lot of those in the U.S. and around the world. Lastly, financial innovation of the four of technology, market, policy, and now financial innovation. We on, quote, Wall Street in the financial sector worldwide have been aggressively this decade innovating with intention. We created what's called the YieldCo, which is a nickname for a very common financial engineering practice of separating out development scale, development phase assets, you know, new projects in development, very at risk. You could lose all your money, no guarantee it gets done, and that requires a high return given the risk. Versus operating assets, a PV project that's finished, it's in commercial operation, it's generating electricity, it's all said and done. while that's very low risk and that deserves investors that are looking for low risk and they don't demand such a high return. So you separate those and you optimize the investment products for the needs or objectives of the different kinds of investors. This was done in real estate, what's called the REIT, Real Estate Investment Trust, where developers spin their finished assets off into REITs. And it's done in the oil and gas business in the form of a master limited partnership, MLP, where oil and gas companies spin out their pipelines and other fixed assets into MLPs. Yieldco is just like an MLP or a REIT, just different tax methods. We've also invented green bonds. Well, actually, they were invented by the World Bank and the IFC. Citi led the generation of the green bond principles, a guideline that's now been adopted globally by over 100 financial institutions. And I was emailing early this morning with the chief economist of the People's Bank of China, the Fed, if you will, of China, who's developing China's green finance regime that's coming out in the next couple of weeks. Again, working with them on the adoption of the green bond principles within the core of the China program. And literally last night was emailing with the Minister of Power of India, who's likewise working with the Minister of Finance of India to adopt the green bond principles in India. So it's gone from the US to Europe to Japan to Australia and everywhere else. Now it's even being adopted in China and India. So this is real financial structuring and innovation, just like policy. You know, some people sit and have coffee, have an idea, write it up, boom, it happens. And this has been the history of policy and market structuring, development, and now financing in the clean energy sector. Intentional people like yourself and myself and Ethan have come up with all these ideas and turned them into policies and practices. And I think the Wilson Center should be looking at this and documenting how did we get here anyway? Take the 100 things that constitute our current situation, analyze them and say, where did they really come from? There is no history book written on this. It's complete blank. People don't know how we got here. Nobody wrote it up. It just happened so fast. So this is something the Wilson Center can do. Now, globally, and I'll just take a few minutes to walk around the world. Ethan has already given us a great briefing. Japan really was the first significant country to move on renewables with their solar program in the late 1990s. I was there in 96 working with the World Bank and witnessed it happen. And now they have the post-Fukushima solar boom, now doing over 10 gigawatts a year from a standing start of zero almost in 2009 in reaction to the nuclear accident. But now they've got two reactors restarted. And here's a Wilson Center analysis, nuclear versus solar in Japan. This is a great analysis to be done. And I don't see anybody really taking it on. But there's your technology competition head-to-head in an environment that really wants to go both ways and doesn't want to go both ways. And it's really a one-on-one heavyweight fight. It deserves thoughtful policy analysis. Denmark in the late 1990s was the first to move on a wind power and came to a screeching halt in the year 2000, complete reversal, just as Germany kicked in with its pro-wind policy and later PV and all renewables with the feed-in tariff. But there the thing to analyze is, what do we do in a mature market? Do we turn policies on and off like a switch? Or is there some maturing behavior of government as these new technologies achieve great penetration in the market, creating a bit of engineering? I'm an electrical engineer. Believe me, the only thing that utilities have to do to adapt to this high penetration and grid integration is do some work. That's what they need to do. They just need to do some engineering work, that's all. So they're complaining in the policy world, but don't let them get away with that. It's just engineering. But what do we do policy-wise? And next came the U.S., of course, and we really got going in the Energy Policy Acts of 2005, 7, 8, 9, and then the Clean Power Program of 2014 and 15. And here the analysis here that you might address that would be applicable, say, to Africa and Latin America, where it's struggling, is regional differences. I mean, we're adding renewables en masse in the West, but in the Southeast, our utilities in the Southeast United States are still in a rate-based world, thinking that these are fully integrated utilities working on a return on a rate base, living in the past. They may prove they're right in the future, but the rest of the world seems to be moving on into electricity markets, not rate-based returns. It's two different models. And yet right in the U.S., we have full implementation of both of these models here 35 years after PURPA was passed. we have a whole sector of our utility industry not adapting to that, and you see some of that behavior also in Europe. And I fear, as a financier, that's to their demise in the end, not moving with the changes in the market as the market changes. But there's a point of analysis of regional differences, and you can see that in Africa as well. In China, it really started with renewable energy law. Renewable energy law of 2006, we've got the big boom. And there you've got the five-year plans by the state council, but behind that is the 100-year plan of the party, which was to build their economy based on dirty coal and don't worry about it, and then use their wealth to clean it up. And you see them making that shift right now. That was their plan. I knew that 10 years ago, and they're coming right down the pike on that plan. Track them and watch this large-scale management of their economy, energy, and so on. India, I've got to wrap up here pretty quick, just a couple of topical points. India, the whole issue is financing. The government can pronounce 175 gigawatts of wind and solar, but where's the $175 billion to back that up and the financing? They have a very financially weak utility sector. We at Citi are working with the Minister of Power and Finance on that and refinancing of the utility sector in order to stabilize it and strengthen it. But there you've got a big economy with lots of rule of law and so forth, but financially stressed. And with financial stress, you can't bring on these investments. Then in Latin America and Africa, I would say here the issue is creating policy in countries too small to implement big markets. And it takes big markets to attract the private sector. Therefore, it has to be adopted on a regional basis, not a country-by-country basis. It's like the U.S., we have state-by-state, but we also have a national environment. And I would suggest the Wilson Center look at Latin America and Africa from a total continental, regional, sub-regional, multi-regional basis, and not worry about, you know, what is Nicaragua going to do, and what is Brazil doing, and what is Chile doing, and we're just not going to attract the private sector's interest doing that. It's just going to always be stuck and not quite there sputtering. So that just gives you a sense of, I'm trying to translate some of Ethan's observations into what can you do about it, and my answer is there's a lot you can do about it. We're not even done. We're 40 years into 100 years. We got 60 years to go. And believe me, the energy markets are driven by public policy. Don't deny that. I do agree with, you know, Ethan's comment that things are becoming more economically driven, but they're not economically driven quite yet. They are policy driven, and then within the policy framework, then you turn to how economic is something. But it starts with policy. And I would say personal observation. I have never seen a country really move ahead on renewable energy until after it has made a full-blown commitment to address climate change. You go back in every big market that has happened, what was the policy regime that caused the capital to be invested? And it was belief in that country had made a commitment, Europe, the US, Japan, Denmark, even China there, that there was a commitment to address climate, and then renewable energy becomes the number one implementing solution to that policy commitment. So I would put that forward. That as you analyze the policies I've been talking about, keep in mind we are a policy-driven marketplace. Policy comes first, the financing comes second. Thanks for having me. It's been a pleasure.